scientism is not science. It's a dangerous and self-refuting philosophy that fixates on means but ignores wisdom.
Dr. Angus Manoogian of the Evangelical Philosophical Society talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it leads to the abolition of man, as man is reduced to a material object. It's used as a weapon by atheists and skeptics to attack religion as a source of knowledge. It begins with Bacon's dictum, knowledge is power, but it overlooks the way in which power corrupts.
You can meet and hear Dr. Angus Manoogian making the case against scientism at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th, 15 miles east of St. Louis in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a list of speakers, topics, and registration information at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Jerusalem is the city of God. Jerusalem is the heartbeat of Israel. Jerusalem is where Abraham placed his son on the altar of the Temple Mount and became the father of many nations. Jerusalem is where Jeremiah and Isaiah penned principles of righteousness that became the moral foundations of Western civilization. Jerusalem is where Messiah will come and establish a kingdom that will never end. We thank you, O Lord, for President Donald Trump's courage in acknowledging to the world a truth established 3,000 years ago, that Jerusalem is and always shall be the eternal capital of the Jewish people. And because of that courage of our president, we gather here today to consecrate the ground upon which the United States Embassy will stand, reminding the dictators of the world that America and Israel are forever united.
That's an excerpt from Pastor John Hagee's benediction at a ceremony Monday, marking the relocation of the U.S. Embassy in Israel to the city of Jerusalem. Now, his motivations here to see this done are certainly theological. They're based deeply in, it's not unique to Hagee, but he's probably one of the bigger living proponents of this kind of dispensational view that sees Israel, the modern nation state of Israel, as the key to understanding the Old and the New Testaments, rather than Christ, by the way. What about the man who actually made the decision, President Donald Trump? It wasn't new to him. It's actually been called for decades, and presidents have promised and not done it. But what about Donald Trump's decision? Was it based in the Bible? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to talk about the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem, Aaron Wolf. He is executive editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. Aaron, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. It's good to be back. And what a lead-in that was. Wow.
It brings back
memories.
Do you believe that President Donald Trump's based his decision to relocate the U.S. Embassy to the city of Jerusalem based on the Bible?
No, I don't. But I do think there are those in his administration who might be influenced that way, Mike Pence being one of them. And certainly a lot of leading Republicans who would think that the Bible has an impact on U.S. foreign policy in this particular way. I don't think Trump thinks that way at all. I mean, he has shown a political savvy in the sense that, like Republicans of the past, he knows that appealing to this idea of Jerusalem as being the eternal capital of Israel and virtually unqualified U.S. support for Israel is something that then in turn appeals to members of his base, evangelical Christians in the United States, for different reasons. And I think that's something that's evolved over the last 20 years or so. I mean, we used to look at Christian Zionism as really a phenomenon that stems from dispensational theology, the eschatology or end times beliefs of American evangelicals that in the 20th century kind of skewed toward this idea that there were multiple dispensations in which God had different plans of salvation for people, something that's very foreign to historic Christianity. But in the 20th century, that came to the fore. And what happened was that I think throughout what I would call the mega churching of America in the 1990s and 2000s, I don't think that ideology has so much, been refuted as it's just kind of vanished away, because evangelical churches increasingly, like all Christians in the United States, don't talk about their doctrine a whole lot. And so I think what's happened is that there still is a base for Trump to appeal to among American Republican, former members of the Christian coalition or the moral majority that Reagan used to get elected. This group kind of still exists, but I don't think they're even as radically dispensationalist as a John Hagee is. I think most evangelicals would consider him to be something of a fringe figure, but yet they're still kind of a knee-jerk pro-Israel ethos among evangelicals, and that is something that goes back really as to colonial times, even in this country, that before there was such a thing as a distinct evangelical movement in this country. So, I mean, there are reasons for that. There was an increasing pull among Christians in the late 17th and early 18th centuries in Britain, and then in the colonies, and then the new states, United States, that followed, to see the world as kind of winding down toward the end. And the passages in the Bible, like the Romans passage where in chapter 11, where Paul talks about all Israel being saved, what does this mean? I mean, there was something of a consensus among Puritan theologians. I mean, I studied Jonathan Edwards and the Puritans in graduate school and came across this regularly, of this idea that the Jews ought to be allowed to return to their homeland of Israel from around the world, because, of course, there was a tiny Jewish population living there at that time. There was no Israel. But the key was, the difference was, that these people thought that the Jews would be converted to Christianity either as a result of moving back there, that a miracle would occur, or that it was a condition for their return. And this whole thing was debated for centuries. Even going up to the late 1800s, there was a debate, not just among dispensationalists, but among many Protestants in general, about whether the Jews would need to convert first and then Israel could be established, or whether they would following. Even the Baptist Calvinist pastor from London, Charles Spurgeon, got in on this debate. So it's a long way of answering this question, that there has been from the beginning of this country, really, a kind of predilection toward viewing what goes on with the Jews in the world and what goes on particularly in this area of the Levant that is now the state of Israel, and some kind of burden that Americans and the British too feel for this variety of reasons of geopolitics and of biblical interpretation, that we somehow ought to be involved in it. And I think Donald Trump is aware of that. I think that he wants to rally the base of people who believe that way. And I think he also has a personal interest here because his son-in-law is Jewish and, you know, from what I can tell, has a kind of Zionist outlook.
Aaron Wolf is our guest, executive editor of Chronicles, Magazine of American Culture. When we come back, we'll talk about that dispensationalism, softer Zionism, and Trump supporters. Stay tuned.
A voice in the wilderness of American evangelicalism. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Aaron Wolf is our guest, executive editor of Chronicles, Magazine of American Culture. You touched upon this briefly before, Aaron, but I'd like you to go into a little more detail. And using John Hagee as an example, we have here kind of a thoroughgoing dispensationalist. It's this odd theology rooted in the, I would say, probably the 18th, 19th century. It is deeply apocalyptic. I'm wondering, for the thoroughgoing dispensationalists, what role do they see in this event of relocating the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem in the end times calendar or end times prophecy?
They would see it as a necessary step toward the rapture. Even among dispensationalists, there's particularly those who are more academically bent. I think of the Dallas Theological Seminary types, the Feinbergs and so on, that these folks are less likely to think. The more academically minded dispensationalists are less likely to think that it is incumbent upon us as Americans politically and militarily to spur these things on. But I would say that the popular version that of which Hagee is the representative would see the United States being the world superpower as kind of having a responsibility toward moving things along in God's plan as they understand it, and I think incorrectly understand it, that there needs to be a reestablishment of Israel in to some extent as it once existed 2,000 years ago in order for God to shift his focus from the church and from the gospel to the nation state of Israel as the fulfillment of what they refer to as the 7-year tribulation. And so all the passages in Revelation in particular, well, really only in Revelation, that delineate this something that looks like a 7-year period or times and half a time. It's this symbolic prophetic language gets boiled into this very woodenly literal 7-year tribulation time in which Israel is the center of tremendous conflict. All the world is battling over control of it, but God has his hand upon it and preserves them as a people in order to then come again, because he's already come to rapture the church at the beginning of this 7 years, and coming again to inaugurate this 1,000-year kingdom that is referred to as a millennium. And it's mentioned in that clip at the beginning, Hagee mentions it. It was pretty crafty, because he gave this prayer that we might call a Judeo-Christian prayer, because in the sense that it was neither fully Jewish nor fully Christian. So he can speak vaguely about, we believe that this is the place where Messiah will come to establish his kingdom. Well, you know, what Messiah are we talking about here? I mean, for Jewish people, that ain't Jesus Christ, Jesus the Christ. It's someone yet unidentified. And so he could pray that prayer and talk about this kingdom and in his mind mean this millennial kingdom that the establishment of the moving of the embassy is a step toward establishing a unified, undivided Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. That's a step toward the fullness of the reestablishment of Israel and ignoring the massive problem of the Palestinians moving forward toward the rapture.
Hagee's dispensationalism, just to use him as an example there, is, to be fair to him, is a theology-driven dispensationalism.
Yeah.
In other words, he has this theology in place, and then that drives his views of geopolitics. There's no doubt about it. It informs his geopolitics. The softer Zionism that you talked about earlier, where kind of the broad swath of the big box church Christian, they just kind of with unexamined assumptions figure Israel ought to be, for some theological reason, a friend of the United States. They couldn't articulate it, but Israel's good, and Israel should be protected, and Israel should be our friend. They don't have a lot of theology behind that. Talk about that softer Zionism.
Well, and it's interesting that that whatever theology there is kind of mixed and mingled with a particular geopolitical outlook. I mean, you hear this phrase, our only democratic ally in the Middle East, or the only democracy in the Middle East. We don't even believe that, really. I mean, they had in 2006 democratic elections sponsored by the United States and observed by international observers in the Gaza Strip, and they elected Hamas to be their ruling party. I mean, this is the which is kind of has precipitated what the violence we're seeing now along the border between Gaza and Israel. And we've helped establish democratic elections, so-called, in Iraq, and they just elected Muqtada al-Sadr, the Shiite cleric whose name was being called out by the Shiites as they were hanging Saddam Hussein. I mean, why are we so obsessed with democracy? Well, or whatever we call that, it's not for theological reasons. It's more of a kind of political philosophy. Now, it may be good, it may not be. But we tend to intermingle this, then. I think not we per se, but American softer dispensationalist types tend to intermingle these thoughts that we have an obligation to Israel because they uphold democratic principles, and these are good somehow in the abstract and not as an outgrowth of centuries of British common law that we inherited in the United States. That we think that it is a good and righteous thing to export this concept. And I think because America is so increasingly polarized politically, driven into this kind of binary of picking one of two sides, that so many of American evangelicals, and this would go for, you know, generally Protestants and Catholics even, who consider themselves conservatives, that they look at what the other side is opposing, and then they immediately say, well, I have to pick the opposite of that. You know, so if you're a Trump supporter, whatever Trump does tends to, you figure out a way that it's good and the other side is unjust. And if you believe the Republican Party is the party that stands for such things as, you know, the sacredness of life, that it opposes abortion, or for traditional families, these Christians are prone, I think, to identify all of the political causes of a particular party, like the Republicans, with just what it means to be a Christian. And so the Republicans support Israel, the Democrats and all of the left-wing media have come out against Trump moving the embassy, against his support for Netanyahu, and so that means we must be for those things. And it really, Israel has become this place for, I've called it imaginary wish fulfillment, where you project, Americans tend to project their beliefs onto this place, not just Americans, but really people all over the world, Zionists, not Christian Zionists, but Zionist Jews, secular Zionist Jews, religious Zionist Jews, anti-Zionists, the whole Arab world, the whole concept of pan-Arabism, the Sunni and Shiite conflict, all of it gets projected onto Israel, and none of it really has to do with historic Christianity.
Aaron Wolf is our guest. We're talking about the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. He's executive editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what he was just discussing a minute ago, Trump supporters, on this issue. Stay tuned. Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Jonathan Fisk is the author of our book of the month for May, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Echo by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. book of the month for May, Echo, Unbroken Truth Worth Repeating Again, by Pastor Jonathan Fisk.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC RUCEM.com.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
You could win an audio DVD of every presentation from all six Issues Etc. Making the Case conferences. Record your answer to the question, Issues Etc. What does this mean, on our comment line, 618-223-8382. If we play your answer during Issues Etc., we'll send you a conference audio DVD of almost 50 hours of teaching. 618-223-8382 and answer the question, Issues Etc., what does this mean? Please be sure to mention where you listen. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem with Aaron Wolf, executive editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. As we approach Memorial Day later this month, remember the work of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. They're committed to serving those who serve. LCMS.org/armed forces. LCMS.org/armed forces. Aaron, you had mentioned this before, and then again just before the break, but talk, if you would, about the Trump supporter and the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. I think sometimes the logic is, as simple as you put it, the president did it, therefore it must be a good idea. We'll come up with the reasons why it's a good idea later. How do you respond to that?
Well, the whole thing is an intractable problem, really, that transcends which president is involved. And the fact that there's so much passion right now about it in the media just shows that most of this has to do with political reasons that have nothing to do with deeply held beliefs about Israel. Because the Congress of the United States passed a law in the mid-90s saying that the United States should move the embassy to Jerusalem. And this is the United States. This happened during the Clinton years, right after the sort of Republican Revolution and Newt Gingrich and the contract with America. This was a big, bold statement that Clinton didn't sign, but that every presidential candidate since has been asked about as a candidate. What do you think about moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem? Because even though the Congress passed this, it never happened because the president was given an out that every 6 months he could, by signing a paper, forestall the move in the interests of security. And that has happened. Even Trump has done it until now. And so, you know, there's been this kind of unanimity on both sides, really. Barack Obama, as a candidate, said the same thing, that the Capitol belongs in undivided Jerusalem. The problem with this is that it's the United States going alone on this, because ever since the 1967 war, the Six-Day War, Israel took all of these Palestinian partitioned lands, including East Jerusalem, and said, we're in charge. And so the peace process ever that Clinton tried to get going at Oslo in 94, all of this has been with the assumption made by the European Union and really all of the Muslim world and everyone except the United States that Israel is illegally occupying East Jerusalem and the West Bank, and that any kind of peace deal would require remedying that problem. So to look at the situation now and see the sort of, you know, knee-jerk reactions of people, you see it has to do in the United States, I think, by and large, with partisan politics. And even those sort of hardcore dispensationalists who have their own biblical reasons that I don't think are sound biblical reasons for supporting Israel overall, I think they're wrapped up in this too, because they've identified their cause with the Republican Party, and because Trump is so pro-Israel with Trump himself.
Then let's just talk about the geopolitical a little bit, and please correct me if I'm wrong, and I may not fully understand the situation, but I've always wondered why Israel is considered such a key ally to the United States and to Western powers when, given its location and its own political surroundings, it's an ally that we can never employ.
Yeah, it's puzzled me over the years. I keep going back to the fact that historically, the conflict predates our involvement. And, I mean, the idea that the Jewish people should have their own ethno-state, which, by the way, is itself now a very controversial thought among American leftists, and one of the reasons why it's being pushed into this binary political sort of choice. If you're for Israel as it currently exists, then maybe that means you're for the concept of an ethno-state, because going all the way back to the British Mandate in 1920, which flows from the Balfour Declaration of 1917, the idea was the British, with the help of other European powers, wished to establish a national home for the Jewish people, which, you know, the Jews are not a monolith. There are plenty of Jews even back then who were anti-Zionist Jews. And so the idea that you would go in, carve out this place, and force it to be sort of an ethno-state was just doomed to be a place of violence from the beginning, because there were people already living there. how the Arab peoples who are called the Palestinians. But going back the century before, after our civil war here, there was already a sense of who's going to control this area. Is the British, the French, or is it going to be the Russians? Because it was part of the empire of the Ottoman Turks before that, and as the Turkish Empire began to crumble, there all the other powers start looking at its former holdings and saying, who is going to take charge there? And so the spirit of Zionism in England really kind of got going amid the Crimean War, and a time when the Russians and the British and the French are fighting essentially to take over where Turkey is falling behind. So I think what happens is that as the British Empire crumbles, the United States takes the baton of world superpower, except we never want to say we have an empire, but we have the greatest empire, I mean, in terms of power the world has ever known. We lost not nearly so many in terms of the percentage of our population in the world wars, and we developed the bomb. So we just have might like the world has never seen, and we have, you know, oceans to protect us. So now we see ourselves as this superpower inheriting the mantle, in some sense, of the British Empire, and we now have to decide the fate of the Levant, of this landmass that is so pivotal in terms of its location. Russia is not far away. Saudis are not far away. Egypt, et cetera, and it's not far from Europe. So I think it's one of these things where it's hard to explain, you know, a rational reason for this, but you just look back at history and see this domino knocked this one over and so on and so forth, and we just wind up taking the reins, really, from the British after World War II.
With only 30 seconds here, Aaron, the region is already deeply violent and conflicted. Will this move of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem make it worse?
It could. It certainly could. I mean, we've seen immediate reaction from the Palestinians in Gaza. That seems to have died off a little bit. But the bigger question is, are we marching toward World War III? And I know that sounds sort of like a grand statement to make, but considering all of the powers that are lining up in different ways, the United States with the Saudis are now reaching out to the Israelis and trying to have some kind of peaceful alliance. Why? Because the Saudis have mortal enemies in Iran and Hezbollah and in Syria, all these surrounding countries that the Saudis wish to destroy for their own reasons. Russia is an ally of the Syrians. The Syrians have interests in defeating Israel as well. So you put all this together, it is something we need to keep our eyes on and perhaps consider that politically our involvement in these conflicts tends to make things worse. As I mentioned earlier, that election of al-Sadr in Iraq, we should learn from these things and realize that maybe our calling as Americans, the calling of our president and our leaders is not to decide the fate of the world, but to govern justly our own people. And I think that the more that we as Christians talk about the dangers also of the dispensationalist doctrine, that it takes our minds and our hearts away from the centrality of Jesus Christ, who said, if you search the scriptures in which you think you have eternal life, they testify of me. And he is the fulfillment of all of these prophecies that are now being diverted into mundane geopolitics.
Aaron Wolf is executive editor of Chronicles, a magazine of American culture. Learn more about Chronicles at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Aaron, it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My pleasure as well.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Tuesday's devastating fire at historic Trinity Lutheran Church in Milwaukee. Dr. John Willie, president of South Wisconsin District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, will be our guest. Stay tuned.
We're currently faced with a crisis in Christianity, a life and death struggle between orthodoxy and heresy, between the kingdom of Christ and the kingdom of the cults.
The Bible Answer Man, Hank Hanegraaff, talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The prosperity gospel, it's nothing short of a wholesale transformation of Christianity. It's the glory of the cross supplanted by the glory of consumerism. It's a fast food Christianity. It's long on looks, but it is dreadfully short on substance.
You can meet and hear Hank Hanegraaff at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org. Don't miss the premier conference for Christian laity, the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan gathers to receive our Lord's gifts in word, baptism, and supper every Sunday morning at 9:15. Bible study at 11. Join us at 4219 Park Lane in Door, or visit us on the web, epiphanydoor.org. Christ-centered, cross-focused, historic, confessional, liturgical, Epiphany Lutheran Church in Door, Michigan. EpiphanyDoor.org. 616-681-0791.
40 years greatly blessed is this year's theme at Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. We engage young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provide an alternative to secular public high schools. Please help us provide tuition assistance to more students by making a special 40th anniversary tax-deductible gift at melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300: Emmanuel Lutheran, Alexandria, Virginia; Bethel Lutheran, Ballinger, Texas; Mount Calvary Lutheran, Eola, Texas; Beautiful Savior Lutheran, Bridgeton, Missouri; Christ Our King Community Lutheran, Costa Mesa, California; Lord of Life Lutheran, Plano, Texas; Christ Lutheran, Platte Woods, Missouri; Hope Lutheran, Sonora, Texas; Faith Lutheran, Azona, Texas; and Emmanuel Lutheran, Steger, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.